And hello, everyone. Welcome to the 17th episode of the Pandemic Sessions. Yes, we are still on the Pandemic Sessions. The pandemic is still going in the world. So until 3/4 of us can sit down together and do this show, the Pandemic Sessions continue. And I guess I should revise that to saying till the two people that don't live in the house can come be in studio, then it continues. But that said, this episode featured a zooming in Silver Badger, and we, of course, talk wrestling. We talk a little bit of politics, a little bit of pandemic stuff like mask wearing and whatnot. We talk a little bit of soccer. We talk some baseball. We talk a little bit of and, of course, we get into movies and TV and things of that nature. So the one thing we don't talk about is Old Guard, because I'm waiting for Bender to come back on to talk about that, so I'm going to reach out to him next week. Anything else? I don't know. You're just going to have to listen and find out. Oh, I will say this. I bring up that it was mine and the Flop's 11th anniversary this past weekend, and we celebrated by going to a funeral service for my aunt who died at the beginning of this whole pandemic lockdown. And so this was our first chance to have a service for her, which was pretty nice. I got to see some family members and some aunts from out of town and my cousins, which is always good. But other than that, we celebrated more by coming home and watching movies and drinking wine. Two bottles of wine, to be exact. Two bottles and one glass from the Boda Box. So we tore it up a little bit. We had all these plans of going out, and it never materialized. So that's what happens when you get into your 40s and it's your 11th anniversary. It's what you all single people have to look forward to. All right, I'm off my soapbox. I'm done. I'm going to have a bomb noise here in just a bit, and the episode will start. Should be about now. Refresh this just a little bit. I don't need a lot because I am playing tonight and I have yet to have dinner. So
what's on tap for dinner tonight?
I have no clue. I tell you what, on that note though, we're back. Badger and I just literally started. It is Badger and I, because no one else is here with us. And we were just talking about how we live 10 minutes apart, and it's rained at his house, very ugly-like, and not at my house. So that's exciting. I know. I'm glad you guys got a peek behind the curtain. But that's how we start in a podcast today, because I tell you what, that melancholy conversation is kind of reflective of my melancholy mood here of late with everything that the world is right now.
So should we jump into the latest melancholy news that just broke an hour ago?
I suppose, because I've been on a work call, so I guess I've missed it. So tell me what it is.
So unfortunately for all you diehard MLS fans, MLS St. Louis delayed till 2023.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's not dead is the good news there, because it could have died. I mean, there's so many things that as long as we keep moving forward, it's good. But, you know, MLS, I woke up Sunday morning and I was like, oh, MLS is back on. I'm going to turn it on. And it was a postponed game due to one of the players testing positive for COVID. So,
yeah, they had to send an entire team home in Dallas. Then I think they had to cancel one more game. But this past week, I think everything's gone without a hitch for the most part. Now, you, since we have known each other, have become somewhat of a soccer aficionado.
A big fan, yeah.
What would you say the quality is like going from the EPL to watching an MLS game?
So it's the easy answer is there is a massive drop in the quality. Let me not say massive because that's an insult, but there is definitely a drop in the quality because the EPL and La Liga and even the Bundesliga have better quality players overall. That's not to say there's not good players in MLS. And what I will say is that as long as the quality all drops even, the game is still good, if that makes sense. It's if you had,
it does.
Yeah, if you had
tilted to where one team had, I'm going to use Madden numbers here, all players in the 90s and the league average is 70s, it would be just the worst thing ever. But I, to keep that Madden analogy, you know, I look at everyone in the EPL is like an 80 or above, and there is, and in the MLS, it's their 70s to 85 at best. You know what I mean?
At best.
At best.
Okay, there's the last league ranking I saw had MLS 20th, which would be on parallel of about like the Turkish league.
Yeah, and that sounds reasonable. It's also a young league, you know, relatively speaking.
Well, it's hamstrung by a couple of things. It's hamstrung by the fact that the league actually owns the players for all the teams. So they're really big on parity. And I think sometimes there's nothing wrong with having dominant teams and crappy teams.
Yeah, at least for a short period.
They build rivalries. They build buzz. They build excitement.
Dynasties build fan base.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of sprinkle all the players around and make it average. It kind of waters down the project. So
yeah,
I think overall, the one good news in the that came out of this news break, MLS St. Louis will continue progress with the stadium. So the stadium should still be done in time. So that gives a year for maybe some European clubs to come and tour. Maybe get the lockdown the high school tournaments, and
they're talking about the esports world championships out of there and stuff like that.
Maybe,
so
I mean, maybe becomes a concert venue too. It has a couple, two or three concerts.
Yeah, which would be awesome because it would be an outdoor venue that you don't have to pay as much for, like that Busch Stadium, because that's the bigger act. It would be that act that can't sell Busch, but still can pack a crowd. You know, it'd be the crowd the size of a. What a Westport can get or a Riverport can get. Yeah. So, and that would be fun. I'm down for that. I'm excited still. You know, the other thing that holds the MLS back too, because of those team ownership and because of that things, we can't really afford to pay players yet compared to the rest of the world. Even some of those 19 leagues in front of us have higher paid players. And until they can make a, you know, superstar living, the superstars are going to go other places, you know? And,
right. I think, I mean, the worst thing that's happened with the MLS is a lot of the really good players are from, as our president called them, the shithole countries.
Yes.
And that's why America didn't qualify for the World Cup, is because these countries like Honduras and Guatemala and Jamaica have got quality players getting quality competition in the MLS compared to what they were doing beforehand, which was their home country's league.
And, you know, and we can shout about this from the mountaintops and we can talk about this, but there's no way around it. Soccer in the United States is still an upper middle class and an upper class league. It's pay to play. It's 100%. Very expensive. I can tell you I'm out three to five grand a year on Hayden. I mean, that's what it costs. Put it this way. It's just over $3,000 before we add travel. Yeah. And you know, it is what it is. If you want them to play, you know, and the good thing for her is she's a girl, so there's probably a better pipeline to success for her.
Yeah.
At least high-level success in this world. But anyway, so that was our MLS and soccer wrap-up. I will say one more thing. I got to bring up the meme while we did it, but who was it? Real Madrid just was named La Liga champs today, right?
I believe they officially won yesterday.
And I just saw a thing with they did say it with a grain of salt, but they were talking about Zidane. Is he is he arguably the greatest coach of all time? Or one of the greatest? Is he on par with Klopp and what's his face? But the stat that made me bring that up was I got to find it, and because it was very cool that. He averages a championship. I can't remember. It's some insane amount, counting his player days. And here it is. Let's see. Well, shoot. It's still amazing. This is great. This is great podcasting, by the way. But I'll have to find it at some point. But it is something silly, like how often he averages a championship between his playing days to his coaching days. And it is unparalleled in any sport on how many he has.
Yeah, I don't think Zidane did any managing before he went to Real Madrid. I don't think. I you know, like you said, bad podcasting, look that up. But yeah, I mean, was on Real Madrid forever, and I feel like he played for an Italian team too. He Zidane kind of predated my enjoyment of European soccer.
Well, he was my first real massive introduction to European soccer because of the headbutt in the
98. Yeah,
which was the last game he ever played.
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Here it is. Zidane's 11th trophy as a coach after 209 games, a trophy every 19 games since he's been in charge of Real Madrid. So just a trophy. So of something. But that's crazy.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see. I think they're in the Champions League still. I can't remember.
I can't remember. Yeah,
it starts back up here again soon. Liverpool's out, so yeah, my interest kind of wanes after that.
I will say this though: now that we did get the soccer out of the way, I was sitting here in St. Louis. As the people know that we do this from St. Louis or St. Peter's, a suburb of St. Louis. St. Louis has rolled back the phase for the youth sports as of Monday. Youth sports are going to essentially be dead again in St. Louis. No competitions outside your own club. No,
is that St. Charles County too?
No, it's just St. Louis, and there is going to be some debate over that because even though the St. Louis Youth Soccer Association League is out of St. Louis, they play their games in St. Charles County, but it has canceled that some of the tournaments that are based on clubs in St. Louis County, even though they play them outside. So people are wondering, one, how is it that clubs like our club based out of St. Charles County can still have their tournaments? And two, are teams that are participating in those tournaments from St. Louis County violating the – it's silly. Unless St. Charles County, St. Louis County, Jefferson County, all of them, they're so close together. We're unique in Missouri where St. Louis doesn't dominate the whole state, much like Chicago does Illinois. Sure. But it's even weirder that we're so close together and we're vastly different in the way our counties operate. But again, like I said earlier, the melancholy start to the podcast, it does have me fearing for school, obviously. And then selfish reason for the podcast, I'm now thinking the Badgers appearance may be pushed back till September, October.
No, yeah, Badgers on lockdown, that's for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'm worried about school as well. To get more onto a pop culture level, worried about football starting and what's that going to look like?
Yeah, no fan. I think their NFL is going to lose their fans in stadium argument. Although I saw, I think it's this weekend, Cardinal tickets go on sale.
Really?
Yeah, they're going to do. It's very limited. Like for instance, there was some of it. Oh, NASCAR had 20,000 fans in its race over this last weekend.
Yeah.
But considering it's a place that holds 100,000, 20,000, kind of you can socially distance and stuff.
Where are you on that? If everything was green lighted tomorrow, would you go to, let's say, a Cardinals game?
Well, I would be a hypocrite to tell you that I wouldn't. Because I've done things that, like, you certainly have not done. I've been places. We've gone out in the world. I'll even say it. We've had a little bit of a scare in our household in terms of exposure to COVID. Our soccer club shut down one day because a staff member got it. Then they followed all the guidelines and they were told, hey, they found the contact tracing and they said, we're good to resume. And then I was at a swimming pool party, and a couple weeks after it, we were called by the hosts of the party and said that one of the families there's young child came down with it. And so we had to really seriously think about what we were going to do in terms of the next day heading the softball game, whether or not I can coach that game, whether or not that team can even be. And a lot of the parents that were at the party, and including, you know, my wife, they made a calls to all the pediatricians, to all the doctors that they could the next day. And the doctors actually said, based on protocol, the fact that we were outside at a swimming pool party and with the temperatures and the pool and stuff, they go, technically, you weren't in contact with COVID. You would have had to been inside in an air conditioner, and it never was at any point. and the family that hosted the party, and no one else from the party has come down with it. And you know, the couple weeks had passed, so they're back out. But
how is the child? Was it the child asymptomatic?
Absolutely fine. Yeah, they had a little bit of a cough, and they took him in, and the cough went away, and the kid's good.
Good.
And that, and professionally, I've had a customer who had to shut down for 4 days and clean their facility, and they had three employees that worked real close together get it. Saying all of that, I still have a realistic fear of this disease. I also still have a realistic, not lack of fear, but knowing that I feel like I will be good. I know it's. For one thing about this disease or this virus, no one can predict how or what it's going to affect. And the more they try, the more they don't understand it. So, sure. You know, that's the bottom line. That said, I've doubled down on wearing my mask. Almost now, I'm almost politically motivated to wear my mask because I feel like it's insane for people that are dying on that hill of I won't wear a mask. Mm-hmm. I feel like if it's the least I could do, why fight it? And I'll tell you this on a side note. One of the reasons we got a late start today is tomorrow is the Bohannon family 11th anniversary for the wife and I. And
congratulations.
So I was out today to trying to get last minute gifts to round out the steel theme to the anniversary. I'm not going to say it too loud because the wife is upstairs. but yeah, so during my excursions today shopping, I saw more masks than I've seen the previous 2 months. There were, and some of that is stores mandating it. Some of that is probably some people coming around, and some of it could have just been a luck seeing people like that out. But it is definitely, it appears that people are starting to come around. Now, I was in downtown St. Louis last week for meeting a customer, and St. Louis was already on that mandate. And I saw tons of people walking around without masks. I saw people going to the restaurants and the restaurant saying you can't have come in without a mask and still allowing people to come in.
Wow. Okay. I went on a grocery run / booze run before the podcast. I went to Fresh Time by my house, and I would say it's probably 90% of people were wearing a mask. So it was good to see out here in the truck.
I know it sounds silly to say, and it's generalization, but Fresh Time's clientele tends to lend itself to being left-leaning mask wearers. I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, for a while, yeah, because when this first started, I was going to Schnucks, and Schnucks is probably about 70%. And not that I felt uncomfortable, but the Schnucks by my house produce is not up to snuff.
Yeah.
So the Fresh Time is kind of easier.
I tell you this, you want to see people starting to lose their shit, especially on the right, the far right. Those people shop the shit out of Walmart, and Walmart is now nationwide went mandatory masks to be inside there. So we'll see how many good viral videos we get out of that this weekend.
Oh, there was a hot 3 days there where all these Hoosiers decided they were going to go to Dierbergs, because Dierbergs, I think, was the last of the major grocery chains around here to say you need to wear a mask. So
yeah, again,
it's a simple thing. I mean, just put the damn thing on for an hour.
And for people to say that it's their God-given right, one, I've never seen that in the Bible. Two, it's also a business's right to refuse your entry, period.
Absolutely.
Period. And no one is telling them that in the middle of the day out in the open field, they have to have a mask on. People are just saying when you go inside into a business, you got to have it. If you go into a government building, you got to have it. And the fact that people say that's against my constitutional right, try going into a courthouse with your shirt off. See how that works. It's stupid.
Well, you know what, though? For the Liberty folks, Missouri did get a big win for them this week. It is no longer illegal to wear a helmet riding a motorcycle. So if you want to go let that beautiful mullet breathe free and easy, you can do it, baby.
Let that brain damage just go.
Well, there's going to be some first responders and a highway patrolman here next year or two who will never eat scrambled eggs again.
Yeah, it's just insane. Just insane. That's always growing up. You know, obviously, I grew up in Southeast Missouri, and then later in life, Southwest Missouri, around what the St. Louisans would call a plethora of Hoosiers. And and because of the lifestyle of my parents, I was around a significant amount of what I would consider bikers. It's unbelievable how many people, same with the mask, were like, you can't force that helmet on me, man. That helmet is, you know, fascism. And I'm like, just what an odd take on things. Like, where did these things come from? Yeah. You wonder where they start, you know, who's the first charismatic master like Charles Manson it and go, you know what? Helmets are bad, man. You shouldn't wear helmets. And everybody's like, you know what? That fucker makes a good point. You know?
Well, there's people, not really in our lifetime, but our parents' lifetime, who are, I ain't wearing no seatbelt. It's so uncomfortable. Oh.
Well, I remember cars without them. I remember being young enough where cars, they had a lap belt in the front for the passenger and the driver, but nothing in the back seat. I'm old enough to know that.
Wow, okay.
Just crazy.
I remember being our kid's age and riding. Now, can Hayden ride up front yet?
So Hayden does. So, yeah, I mean, the if you were to listen to what they say now is the rules for without a booster seat, they're saying 10 or 9, or 90 pounds, something like that.
Yes, I would have been riding on a booster seat freshman year to high school. Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Hayden's big enough and her weight is to where we're like, she's fine. And so we have a very good friend that our kids, my oldest daughter grew up with their kid for the most part, who's a firefighter. And he said, at the end of the day, it's where that top strap crosses you. If it crosses them in a good spot that's not on the neck, they're fine. He goes, and I'm not making my kid ride in the back seat at 10 years old in a booster seat. Like, they'll be ostracized from their school. They won't be, you know, they'll be the nerd, you know, and the bad nerd, the old school 70s and 80s nerd.
Right. And the baby. I remember being John's age, my son's going to be 6 years shortly. I remember being in kindergarten riding shotgun in my dad's car or my mom's car. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, like, I mean, we used to. You know, even in high school, when a friend would have a hot rod that was pretty accurate, and it would have the leather seats and no seat belts in the back, and even up in the front, we would wax those bad boy seats up and sit back there and let him drive like shit and throw us all over the place. I mean,
yeah,
it's a good time. I remember that as a kid.
Did your mom or dad ever have the station wagon with the tail gunner seats?
Oh, no, but that's – I did. It's funny. Yeah, I'll bring this up. I guess I could have held it for Throw It to Missy segment, but I just started listening to the podcast The Darkest Timeline. And okay. The Darkest Timeline is Dr. Ken and Joe McHale. And it's loosely a community podcast because they do talk about community quite a bit. They'll have people on. But Jim Rash, who was the dean – Oscar-winning writer with Nat Faxon, they did the Descendants. They also wrote the movie The Way Way Back, which the
great
way
movie,
yeah, and that's what that movie was based on. Riding in the back, you know, and Jim Rash said, I based it on my childhood going to and from lakes in the way back in that back seat. He goes, I could write a movie around this. So
okay, I've never read a movie. Sam Neill's – is it not Sam Neill? What's his name? Sam –
Sam Worthington – or not Worthington.
Waterston?
No. Only one of the – a great actor. What is his name? God, we're knocking it out of the park right now. It is our COVID episode for sure because we are playing like we're – you know, we're on lockdown. Here you go. Sam – God damn. You know that there's people screaming at us right now. Here it is. Sam, he was in the movie Moon, which is what made me – that's the quickest way I could look that up. Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell.
Yes. Very great actor, Sam Rockwell. An underrated actor.
His father was a great painter.
Go Norman Rockwell. I went to school funny story there. I went to school with a Tom Benton. Thomas Hart Benton's probably Missouri's most famous painter. The murals in the national are in the our capital, state capital, were painted by him, and it was his great-great-grandfather.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was art major like myself, trying to follow in granddad's footsteps, but he was awful and changed his major to Spanish. Which is a smooth transition, art to Spanish, like it's nothing. Yeah. hey, we were talking about craziness of, you know, people with masks and stuff, but I did have some pop culture stuff to talk about today.
People are probably like, thank God, this is why we tuned in.
Yeah, no doubt. So the first crazy I wanted to talk about was who knew years ago. I don't even know how many years they've been divorced now. But who knew in the Mariah Carey-Nick Cannon relationship that Nick Cannon was actually the crazy one?
Man, I took some heat on Twitter about Nick Cannon this past week because I defended him saying he's not a racist.
Oh, I didn't see. I saw your post. I didn't hear you say that he wasn't a racist. I think he's.
First off, I think
you said he's crazy. Yeah, you said he wasn't a racist, maybe not a racist, but you said maybe an idiot or
He's an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a complete idiot. I watched that video where everyone's jumping on his ass for. I mean, the boils down to he thinks that white people hate black people because we're jealous that we don't have dark skin.
Well, he says the lack of melatonin makes us lash out and commit crimes, and that's what made them to become savages. And he's actually he's not as racist as he is, like you said, stupid, because he's regurgitating a theory from someone who is very anti-Semitic or anti-Semitism, and it's silly. It's silly. If you just sit back and listen to it, and I judge him as silly as the way I judge someone like Donald Trump. It's just amazing how much information and how much access to enough stuff that should make you feel empathy in the world is out there, and how much people ignore it.
Yeah, I mean,
Deshaun Jackson in the NFL just went through it this week.
What's that?
Deshaun Jackson in the NFL last week had to go through it too. Yes.
The thing with Nick Cannon, my buddy sent me the classic Chappelle show. It's like, fuck Nick Cannon.
Yeah. Nick Cannon. Yeah, there's a. I can't remember. Who was he? Oh, he feuds with. I don't remember.
Eminem,
yeah. Yeah. And I actually fell down a rabbit hole thanks to listening to the Fighter and the Kid podcast about the greatest that show Wild and Out, the greatest freestyle raps at the end of it. And there was like the top 10 on YouTube of the finishes to the show, and at least five of them diss Nick Cannon's rap ability and stuff. I was like, oh, so this is a theme. Nick Cannon among his peers also sucks.
I did a little research on Nick Cannon this week. I thought he kind of grew up well off. He did not. I mean, give him credit where credit's due. But obviously, I just called the guy an idiot 2 minutes ago. He's got some charm. He's got some charisma.
He's got a very successful production company. He is very wealthy by his own doing. So you can't. He's not a dumb guy.
Right. He's got. Now watch my words carefully here, because everybody's so sensitive these days. He has crossover appeal with white America.
That's exactly. I knew that's where you're going. He has mainstream marketing appeal, and you can take from that what you want to make.
That's gone now, obviously.
Well,
but.
See, he started pooping on that back in America's Got Talent. When he left America's Got Talent, he cited that the reason he left is because that show was stealing his blackness. And that they wanted him to be white. And that's why he started dressing in crazy shoes and stuff. And maybe that is. I don't know. I don't know all the inner workings. But I'll say this. Something happened with him. Whether he's been – because I find it hard to believe that for 40 years, however old he is, 38, 40, 41, 42, whatever he is, I find it hard to believe that for the last 20 years of his career, he's been suppressing who he is. And we're just now he's allowing himself to see it. Maybe he feels like he's made enough money. He's got that fuck you money. And now he can say it like he means it. I find that hard to believe. I tend to think that with so many celebrities, white, black, whatever, I think at some point either the medication's changing, or we're just someone – there's been a good PR handler that has kept him in check, and now they're not there. And this happens with a lot of celebrity. Look at Johnny Depp. He is crazy as it gets, but in the last 8-10 years, but the previous 20 years, he was the sexiest man alive. He was the definition of cool. But
I do find it funny that all these pictures are coming out during his divorce proceedings of him just being a sloppy mess, and America's got his back on it. Like, well, who amongst us is not passed out drunk?
Right.
And ice cream spill over our pants.
Yeah.
Going back to Nick Cannon, and look, you and I are smart guys. We know that we are two middle-aged white guys in flyover country. So yeah, we can only speculate what's going through Nick Cannon's mind. But I do feel like sometimes, and this is, again, put it in context, in a middle-aged white guy flyover country, that successful African-American men especially sometimes feel the heat coming
from their to be on that platform and
that's got to be hard.
Yeah,
I mean, so I don't get it. You and I don't get it. So I can understand why somebody like Nick Cannon would maybe try to put the brakes on that, feel like his identity has been lost, and then try to overcompensate by going completely in the 180 in their direction to prove to everybody how, you know, for lack of a better word, black.
Yeah, and unfortunately for him, maybe this is him, but unfortunately for him, there is the knee-jerk reaction, or the popular, or the majority of people will sometimes, most of the time, I'd say, look at that, and even I'm sure some of the people in his own community look at it and go, you know what, that guy is trying too hard. For the last 20 years, he's been something else, and now look at this motherfucker, you know. Sure. And it's we can never begin for two things. Like you said, we're white guys, so we don't know anything that he's had to go through being a black guy or what he's really wanted to say. And also, we've never, even though he did grow up hard, like you said, or not rich, he's fucking rich as shit now, and we don't know what that's like. You know, rich as shit when people not just wait on you hand and foot, but when, for the most part, until you screw up like this and your sponsorship starts dropping, people will just cater to you and kiss your ass left and right. That's got to be an addiction that very few people know.
You know, I think we touched upon it, if not in our last one-on-one episode, you and me, or a previous one, where we talked about The Last Dance and how monumental that was. And one of the big takeaways from that was Michael Jordan reflecting on getting heat about not supporting a certain candidate in the North Carolina Senate. And then the black community said Michael Jordan had to speak up more. Michael Jordan's like, I don't know anything about politics.
Yeah.
When did we become as a society on either side of the aisle? Because these celebrities are very talented in their fields, but that doesn't mean that they understand diplomacy any more than the average American. We're hammering people like, you know, Chuck Woolery or LeBron James or, you know, Drew Brees or whoever it may be.
We've learned anything,
are not Rhodes Scholars.
Learned anything from our president, being rich does not make you smart. You know, I mean, it's just the bottom line to that. I mean, like you said, Chuck Woolery, I didn't know he was who he was. He was just on an episode of Scrubs that I've been rewatching, and I was like,
"You know who Chuck Woolery was?"
No, I didn't.
I know you knew Chuck Woolery.
I didn't know who he was as a person until he tweeted stuff out. Yeah, is what I mean.
I
just thought he was he was on Scrubs where he was a beloved. He was played himself, and he was the lovable Chuck Woolery, and that's what I thought. And now here he is. Saying the CDC lies to you, everyone lies to you, it's all politics, there's no such thing as a health risk. And like, oh, so he's like James Woods' neighbor, you know, old Jimmy Woods' neighbor over there.
Well, Chuck Woolery did walk back the COVID thing after his son tested positive for it.
Oh, imagine that. It's never true until it happens to you. Really?
That does seem to be the Republican Party mantra.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens after their next national convention down in Florida.
Yeah. We've gone a little political here.
Political and we were political and we were racial.
Been watched in the Jeremy Bohannon household as of late.
Well, we did watch something that we can't talk about. So we're going to glass pass it because the Old Guard movie, and Bender has to come on for that. I'll just tell you this. It's a 5 out of 5 for me. I mean, it was a great movie. It's one of my favorite from Netflix so far. But it is comic book based, and Bender's the one that turned me onto the comic, and he, you know, watched it first. So I'm going to go to something that would alienate Bender and include you. And I know you're catching up, so you tell me where to pump the brakes. But the season finale to The Challenge was this past Wednesday night.
Well, I'm only about 3 or 4 episodes in, so I know who won though because I follow the winner on Twitter.
Yeah.
So,
and
spoiler alert
for people:
3, 2, 1.
It was a return to form for the greatest player of all time, Johnny Bananas reclaimed his prize as
he has teased a retirement.
He has, and he's 38. We looked it up. He's 38. That is pretty old. Although I will say this, there's been a lot of internet rumbling from Mark. Remember Mark from it?
Mark Long.
Yeah, Mark Long, to get an OG episode. Like, you know, sometimes they do these celebrity episodes in between the real seasons. He's saying they need to do an OG episode. Bananas, even though he's relevant, he is an OG.
I mean, I would love to be the producers on that show. And I mean, I've heard from podcasts here and there on how it works, on who gets invited.
Yeah.
But and a lot of the OGs, I think, are, you know, especially the women have, you know, have families now.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't want any part of that. So,
well, some of the women have been tweeting out there, and some of them have been saying, like Coral said, and by the way, I'm in shape. I can handle this. And she showed her bikini body and she's like, I still got the body for it. And I'm like, well, that would be a fun episode, you know, yeah, our fun season. It should also be said that the other guy to win it, I'm just kidding, was Jenny. Jenny won for the girls and Bananas won for the guys. And Jenny, I told Missy, I said, Jenny is probably not as strong at the politics as Cara Maria has ever been. And I know being a part hitched to Pauly has really helped her political game. But she's the winningest woman in challenge, you know, history. But the finals win.
Most wins, right?
Finals wins, yeah. And
I think Ashley's made the most money ever.
Well, she did because she up until Bananas won last night, she had the most because one episode, the one season she won, paid more than every other season that Bananas had won combined.
When she took the money from Hunter, right?
Yes, yeah. And that's just because of the show's
a bad person. She is a heel.
You know, though, and she is, but she's liked more off camera than she is on camera. You can see on Twitter, like TJ Lavin came out and did an interview a couple weeks ago saying how, you know, the challenge is to having its best ratings ever, one of its best reviewed seasons ever. And he said after 38 seasons, maybe people should finally say, give it its due. It predates Survivor. It predates the all of it. And he said, and so she retweeted, she goes, look at TJ sticking up for the show and something. I can't remember. And so Johnny retweeted what she said and said, hey, you're a big reason we're so popular too. You're a part of this family. And I was like, I'll be damned. You know, it's amazing that he spoke up and said that to her. Who
now, I believe, because I mean, we can talk about this in a second, too, after we talk about this. I've been watching a lot, been interested in a lot of ratings on Wednesday night lately.
Yeah.
But I don't think their ratings is as good as it was 20 years ago, but it's so diluted now.
Yeah.
As far as numbers of people, eyeballs, it's probably half of what it was in its prime time. But as far as eyeballs on Wednesday night, it is the number one show in cable.
Yeah, it's been fun. But back to Jenny though, back to what we were talking about with Jenny and Cara Maria got us off on that tangent. I told Missy, I said, I got to tell you, physically, Jenny, we may be looking at what may be the most dominant woman in the history of the show. She is a monster, and she, by the way, you know, she beat the men in almost every leg of that race until the final, and then Bananas being Bananas kind of kicked in. And we should say, too, that this was a big win for Bananas because, one, he hadn't won an elimination since the double cross, the curse, and, two, he had not been in a final since the double cross, and he'd won two eliminations and the final this year. So good for Bananas. $500,000 in his pocket.
He's a face now, right?
This season, he was probably the most face turn he ever had, which was interesting because him and Wes have always been a heel battle. And by becoming friends this year, they both went face. And it's funny. I mean, that's a good segue because Missy alerted me to an article about Wes. So Dee, who is banned from the show now, who said some racially insensitive things, who's probably been one of the least likable characters on the show. I guess after she was kicked off the show, she tried to get back to Australia to her family and the lockdown happened and she wasn't able to. And I think that they seriously went on suicide watch with her. So Wes tracked her down and brought her to live at his house to help her get through it. And he said she's not a bad person if you personally know her. He understand what he put a thing out. He goes, I was going to distance myself from her. He goes, because she said what everything that she's been doing's been a little silly. He goes, but I just can't. He said, I can't let someone go through what they're going through by themselves. So he moved her into his house until the restrictions were open for her to fly back.
Was Wes in the season of Real World with the girl that was the cutter?
I can't remember.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
It's curious. Kelly would know. She's the historian for that show. I think Bananas made the face turn. He went on probably about a year after betraying Sarah. He slowly started becoming face. Becoming like, pull up. You know, the dick, and more like, you know what, I'm just here to help everybody and play the best game I can. Like CT. I mean, CT did the ultimate face turn. And,
oh, yeah. Well, DM helped that.
Even Wes, I think, had a face turn. So, you know what, it's like wrestling. Everything in life goes back to wrestling. Yeah. At a certain point when you've been around for so long, even if you want to be heel, the fans are going to be like, nah, you're a face.
Yeah. You also brought up a good point with Bananas, which is another good segue to probably the biggest, most noble move in the history of the show, is one of the reasons it's been easy for Bananas to become a face is because there's been an injection of some heels like Devin, which is his real rival and an idiot I can't stand him. He's a toolbox. The night he followed Bananas around all night until Bananas said, do you think your dad would be proud of you right now? And everybody was up in arm. You don't talk about his dad. Legitimate question. A drunk guy wasted off his ass whose dad had died 6 weeks earlier was acting a fool. It's a legitimate question. Dude, think about the way you're acting. Because Bananas was not provoking any of that. But not just him, but there's been a Nelson has acted dumb and been a Bananas feud and stuff like that, which is what I wanted to get into. Nelson, who probably goes after women in a very ugly way at least once per season and then always apologize. I even made the comment, one of my daughters made the comment to us, said, you know, his apology doesn't work if he keeps doing it. And which he does. He goes after, he calls women whores, calls them the biggest bitch in the show. He does it every year when he gets drunk and then he regrets it. Well, he, going into the very, what we thought was the last elimination before the final, it was between him and Corey to go down and take on, I can't remember who it was, but someone good. It was Rogan. Take on Rogan. And he said, before they even got a chance to vote, he came to the tribunal and he said, hey, Corey's got a newborn baby, or a very young baby. He's got one on the way. He goes, he's starting a family and a life somewhere I'm not at in life. So he could use this money more than me. Put me in. So he, on the eve of going to the final, put himself into elimination because Corey was his best friend. And he said he would feel bad seeing Corey go home and him going to the final. And sure enough, he went down there and got his ass kicked in hall brawl by Rogan, who was bigger, stronger, and just as fast. And what a move. I mean, even Bananas go, probably the most unselfish thing I've ever seen in the challenge. And
Nelson, you know what? I can't excuse Nelson's behavior. He has done some terrible things, but he's a fucking charming guy, man. He's
a charming guy when he is not drinking, but when he loses or when he's drunk, he does not handle it well. And a lot of people are that way.
Well, he's gotten better. I mean,
although you haven't got to it yet this year.
Okay, I'll watch it. I used to hate Wes. I used to hate Zach. I mean, they've all won me over the years by being a little bit.
Zach's kind of not good in this season either, and we're gonna see on the wrap up show what was the deal? Why he?
I think they already teased it. I haven't got to it yet, but yeah, there's always the him and Jenna fighting on the phone.
Yeah, he gets what he does is if he's not 100% got proof that cheated on him. Then he is the biggest asshole in the world for what he does when he's on the show, which he's on the show.
Thanks.
I think there was one more thing. Oh, the hall brawl, by the way. D, who is everyone's favorite villain right now, or not least favorite villain, in hall brawl, I've never seen on the challenge since the banana pack a person get moved as easy and effortless as that hall brawl with Jenny. Jenny, she was turned around trying to push on the walls, and Jenny just moved her right on out of there like she was nothing twice in a row. It was, I mean, she's a monster. You know, going back to the first elimination where she takes the one hand and just throws those things up and over.
Need to see Jenny versus Laurel, man.
I don't think Laurel, me and Missy were talking about that. I don't think Laurel, Laurel is a cerebral assassin, and she has got endurance, and she's a runner. I don't think she wants a physical event against someone like Jenny, because Jenny is a, she's built like a guy.
Laurel's 5'10", though?
Oh, 5'10", but I think that works against her when Jenny is a couple inches shorter and a much more solid. She's in between that Cara Maria and that Laurel height. And then they also, by the way, they show Jenny's entire family. She has 9 sisters and 1 brother. And with the exception of the collagen-injected lips, they're all identical. I go, holy shit, there's 8 other Jennies in the world.
Bring back the bloodlines.
Yeah, no doubt. She fills the whole women's side is just her family.
Oh, Banana's his worthless cousin.
Yeah, yeah. I forget, who was his cousin?
It's like Vinny or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
right. I think they brought him back for, like, Banana's carried his ass, fat ass, and then he came back for another season, and he got... Banana's couldn't help him.
Yeah, he came back, and then he came back on a season where they weren't an alliance, and he just—I mean, not that they weren't an alliance, but yeah, he had to hang carry himself. That was also the season. That was my favorite season when Cara Maria's Boston accent somehow reared its head because of her cousin. Come on, cousin, cousin.
Come on, cousin.
I'm like, well, where is this coming from? And they even someone even threw it in her face. So they're like, suddenly you're like the most Boston person we've ever heard. So, what have you been watching?
Well, as far as talk about 3 things. One. Put it every once in a while. If you are following us on Facebook, you'll see Tommy Silver Badger's movie reviews.
And occasionally, so
watched the Tom Cruise movie Greyhound. Kind of a paint by numbers World War II movie. Very intense. A very quick 80-85 minutes where you will be on the edge of your seat. Hanks just being, I mean, what can't Tom Hanks do? He can land a plane in the Hudson River. He can lead you in battle on D-Day.
He can defeat COVID.
Captain a destroyer ship now. I mean, I would probably fictional people. And Tom Hanks, if he told me, hey, I got to go to hell to retrieve this, who's coming with me? I'm like,
listen,
Tom, lead us through, baby. I got your back.
Let's go. Can also be the greatest educator in Mr. Rogers, and he can defeat COVID in real life. There's only probably one person fictionally that can do more than him, and that's Keanu, just because he was John Wick, and I'm fairly certain John Wick can beat everybody.
Well, he was all, I don't know if it's, well, no, I was about to say, I don't know if Tom Hanks has ever been an FBI agent, but I believe he has in Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, he was. Yeah, he was. He was.
I don't know if he ever played the Rose Bowl.
Like knock, John knock. Who's there? Go fuck yourself. That was his Catch Me If You Can joke. You want to hear a joke?
The show I've been watching lately, we've been just trying to watch some mindless game shows to get our mind off some boredom. We've been watching this show on Netflix called Awake. Are you familiar with the show?
I saw it, but I have not watched anything or read anything about it.
So Awake is a show where people are sequestered in a room for 24 hours and are told they have to count as many quarters as they can. After 24 hours is up, I believe there are 6 contestants. The person who counts the least amount of quarters goes home like that. And the person who, so you count your quarters and then you have to tell the producers how many you counted. The person who's off the most, they go home. And then the rest of the game show is people doing menial tasks, like remembering 10 animal sounds in a row, trying to remember them all in sequence. And then, you know, people start getting eliminated here and there. It's... sounds stupid, but it's a pretty entertaining game show.
Yeah, I'll have to see it. I'll have to see it because it does. Not that your description of it sounded stupid. It just sounds like a stupid show. But
well, it is. It's completely stupid.
But it could be entertaining. I mean, you know, it's weird how stupid shows are entertaining.
And then, of course, the big thing now is wrestling kind of good again? AEW just coming off 3 hot weeks of great matches, and now the cleaner could be back. Kenny Omega turning heel. What? I mean, Being the Elite has been a Monday viewing.
Everyone expected Hangman to be the one the heel turn there, which is what they did a good job with that.
I mean, he still could, but this past week they're definitely teasing the Kenny Omega.
Fighter Fest was awesome. I tell you this, the work that they're getting out of the goofiest act from the independent scene in Orange Cassidy is unparalleled. That guy is an MVP. That match with him and Jericho, if it wasn't for the 8-man tag match, that was hands down the best match of the night and one of the best matches of this whole COVID time frame.
Orange Cassidy. Now the thing about Orange Cassidy, though, is Orange Cassidy's close to my age. I think he's like 35, 36.
Wrestling age, though. 35 to 40 is your prime.
He's over, man. I think he's got the most merch sales in AEW right now. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Orange Cassidy, you have to seem to believe him. He doesn't do promos. All his whole shtick is just being a lazy wrestler.
Where puts his hands in his pockets.
His finishing, he does little kicks to your shin.
Yeah,
and the crowd just eats it up.
And winds up the last super kick that doesn't kick you very hard. But
Jericho's been a great foil for him. And then,
he's
a talented wrestler.
So he is over, but like, you know, like everything, he is over essentially already over on style. But like most things in life, wrestling is no different. Mr. Kennedy back from the 2000s can show you this. It doesn't matter how much style you have if you don't have substance. And Orange Cassidy can flat work. He can work.
Yeah.
He can sell. His acrobatics and his athleticism is off the charts, because for those that, like we just alluded to, he does a lot of flips and dives and things with his hands in his pockets.
With his hands in his pockets. Yeah. And Jericho on his podcast talked about it candidly. He's like, when I first saw this guy, I'm like, what the fuck is this company thinking? This guy is an indie joke. But then when he saw him in live crowds and the way the crowd, I mean, he was getting biggest pop, second biggest pop of the night, nightly.
Yeah.
I mean, fans loved him. And it's just, the WWE just has box these guys and girls into what they need to do, that you can't be yourself anymore. And AEW gives free reign to these people. And I mean,
well, and their biggest sin in the WWE is that they do have a proven commodity in NXT. And when these guys get promoted to the show, they drop the ball on what made them popular. Keith Lee just won the title over Adam Cole. Adam Cole's been as valuable and as good a worker as anyone in all of pro wrestling. He's going to go to the main card, and he's going to be washed out and gobbled up is what's going to happen to him.
Well, Adam Cole, I think, is probably just biding his time until that contract runs out.
Well, he just came back, you know. He came back to – he had his chance at AEW, but he came back to NXT, and he got over. But again, yeah,
his contract is up next fall. Be very curious to see if he comes back when all of his best real life friends and his hot smoking girlfriend, who also work in AEW, come back.
It is,
and just real quickly, just interesting conversation. It kind of ties into to life. So my oldest son, Johnny Bananas, is not the star of the challenge. I think we're the same age, as we've already established. My son, he'll be 6 in August, was watching AEW with me, and he really loves Cody Rhodes. I can't call him Cody Rhodes legally. I have to call him Cody because Vince apparently owns Cody Rhodes.
That's
why he's called Cody. In this day and age where people are trying to be more accepting, and that you and I are on the same wavelength of that, Cody is the AEW champion, the TNT champion. It's kind of like the intercontinental belt for those of you who maybe have given AEW a chance here. It's a mid-card belt. And Cody wrestles every Wednesday night.
The worker's belt.
Yeah, the worker's belt. Yep. And this past week, he wrestled Sonny Kiss, which I knew would be challenging to explain to a 5-year-old Sonny Kiss's gimmick. Now, Sonny Kiss's gimmick, for those of you who don't know, Sonny Kiss is an African-American man who, for lack of a better word, is dresses like a woman. Wears makeup.
Cross dresses as much as you can get away with by on TV as a guy wrestler.
Right, right. And, you know, is not transitioning or anything like that, as far as I know. I try to do the research beforehand because I knew my son was going to ask questions and I wanted to be as politically correct with him as possible because I think tolerance is extremely important and understanding that people are different than you and have different interests and not to ostracize them or make them feel uncomfortable. So, yes, you know, why is Cody wrestling a girl? Like, right off the bat, I'm like, here we go. And so I just said that, Sunny Kiss is a boy just like you that likes to dress up like a girl, just like sometimes you like to dress up as a superhero, and there's nothing wrong with that. And he just said, okay.
Let her go.
It's just the innocence of children sometimes just makes you think about how great this world can be because he totally accepted that answer, bought into it, and yeah, he was rooting for Cody, but after the match when Cody and Sonny Kiss gave hugs, he's like, that was a good match for Sonny. It made me really proud. So,
well, I think you just shone a light on, you said, how great this world could be, but also you didn't shine a light on this, but you also, it could be said you illustrated how bad the world could be because you taught him it was okay. You explained it the best way. You were like, hey, he likes to dress up sometimes like you like to dress up like a superhero, and it's okay. That's the best way to do it. Unfortunately, there probably was some people, I wouldn't say significant, because chances are if you're watching AEW, you know what you're getting into. But I bet there's some people out there that said, you know, son, we're just turning this fucking thing off. You're never going to do that. You know, there's
there's huge heat for that. Yeah. Not huge. I mean, everything this day, if two people complain on Twitter, it's huge.
Huge heat, yeah.
But no, there were some very derogatory terms towards Sonny this week. And both Cody and his brother, Dustin,
who has made, by the way, for those that remember or don't know, Dustin is the ultimate, quote unquote, cross-dressing wrestler. His gimmick, Goldust, at one time was as over and as big a heel as you possibly could get. And was in mainstream WWE when wrestling was at its peak. And he didn't get a lot of shit. But now people are getting shit for it, which just shows you that we may even sometimes regress instead of progress in our society.
We've been joined by super fan Johnny Bananas
here. Yeah. You also brought up a good point, too, to further say how hot AEW is right now. It's put out three quality shows. And they're without their champ because of COVID. They're without wrestlers, you know. I mean, they're not even operating at full strength, so to speak, and they're knocking it out of the park.
Absolutely, yeah. John Moxley's a real-life wife who worked for WWE and got fired 2 or 3 weeks ago, came down with the COVID, and Moxley had been off the show for a while and thought he had a good, not great match with Brian Cage. I think Moxley's one of those characters that was fun. I'm on. So,
keep quiet. Tell him, give us 5 to 10 more minutes.
Yeah, 5 more minutes, all right? Can you go upstairs for 5 minutes and be quiet? Okay. Sorry about that, everybody.
It happens.
I think Moxley's one of the, characters that needs an audience to really set him apart. You know, he's got the unique entrance. It's hard with AEW. The style of AEW is kind of like a more flips, more athleticism. That strong style. There's not a lot of that in AEW, and I think that kind of is discombobulating sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But he's obviously top 5 biggest names that's in the company right now. I mean,
yeah.
Him, Jericho, Cody, Omega.
That's the big ones there.
The big four, probably, yeah. And a lot of Americans don't know who Omega is, and Omega's gotten a lot of criticism because he has not been, quote-unquote, up to the level he was in New Japan 16 through 18.
Well, I think that's targeted on AEW's part. I think they have not suppressed, but they've tampered down him and the Young Bucks because it would have been too easy for them to just put those guys at the top of the bill and run with it. Now you can build stories. You know, you pull them back in. You don't give the Young Bucks the title. You don't give Omega the title. You don't put him in that title picture right away, although he did wrestle Jericho early. And you're going to get more money out of them in the long run without putting them right at the top right away. I think they're doing it smart. I think they're giving everyone a chance to shine.
It's the best 2 hours of wrestling I've watched in 20 years. I mean, almost every storyline is interesting. It's you just don't see that anymore in the WWE. I mean,
yeah, well, big, it's not the since the 90s.
WWE, I mean, look, WWE has a pay-per-view on Sunday. Their matches are an eye-for-an-eye match with Rey Mysterio.
By the way, which was done in February in AEW.
Mm-hmm. Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt for the 10th time probably in 5 years.
Which is going to be a cinematic match.
Isn't it Randy Orton versus Big Show?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's...
What the fuck? Is this 2020?
Now, Randy Orton is in... Randy Orton is in the middle of a career resurgence, but he's still... You know what you're going to get with Randy Orton. At the end of the day, he's going to go over, you know, no matter what, even if he's a bad guy. And he's going to work. Randy Orton is one of those rare guys that can go out there and mail it in and give you a match that's better than 85% of the people in the world can give you. But when he's motivated and driven, he can go out there and hit a grand slam and be one of the greatest workers in the world. But unfortunately, with the exception of his feud with Edge of late, he's been the guy that's willing to go out there and just do 80%.
Here's Randy Orton in a nutshell in his entire career. Randy Orton is like going to a 7-course restaurant. And each course gets better and better till that 6th course where it's like your entree. And you get like a well-done sirloin steak. And you're like, what the fuck is this? And then you're like, okay, this kind of just ruined the whole night. And then your last course dessert is good enough where you're like, well, I guess that place is okay. I'll try it again.
Yeah.
It's always like that. His storylines are always good until the payoff match. And then it's boring as hell every time.
Well, now his feud with which what essentially catapulted Seth Rollins to the championship, because in the same night that Rollins lost to him, he then cashed in his Money in the Bank. His feud with Rollins, that match at WrestleMania that kicked off the outdoor show, was unbelievably good. And my favorite RKO of the whole time, which he reversed the curb stomp. And, you know, he raised up and Rollins. And, you know, hearing the backstory on that. But yeah, he's been unmotivated for the last 10 years. So, anyway, that's a good lengthy talk of wrestling, which we always do. I can't remember. Was that your second or the third thing you wanted to talk about? That was all three.
That was all three. So let's wrap it up here. We've waited a long time and we've had professional European soccer, the last 2 or 3 weeks, but starting next week, by the next time I see you,
we'll have sports to talk about.
We'll have seen a St. Louis professional sports team play.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about both the Cardinals and the Blues?
I am super excited to see both of them return. I'm still cautiously optimistic that it's actually going to happen. Until it happens from the big sports, and everybody knows that in America, the big three sports are the big four, MLB, NFL, NHL, and NBA. Until we see them actually get executed, I will not believe it's going to happen. And that's just, I'm not a pessimist. It's just bubbles burst and the NBA is in a bubble. The NHL, I feel like, has a better chance of happening than all of them because they're hockey players and that's what they do. MLB, if they happen, I don't know what it's going to look like in terms of superstars because I still feel we're waiting for some to not be a part of it.
Did you see what happened with the Edmonton Oilers arena last night?
No.
Bad storm. So Edmonton is where all the Western Conference teams will be playing here for the next 2 months or whatever, including the Blues. And last night they had a big storm come through in Edmonton, and the video cameras caught basically the concourse covered in about a foot of water.
Oh, boy.
Which I guess doesn't matter if fans aren't going to be there, but...
still a little scary.
Yeah, it's... always something in 2020.
Yeah, no doubt. But I guess on that note, since we are very close, now more it's been a long time since it's really meant anything, you can go ahead and sign us out.
Hey, everybody. August 2nd, in theory, the Blues will be back. So let's go, Blues.
And I will see you at the very least in 2021 in person. So
maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Fingers crossed. But we're going to play the music. So thanks, bud. I'll talk to you later. Bye.